Morning is G Urban Companies versus Roseville Area School Districts. I'll just indicate for the record that our panel is now rejoined by Judge Schmidt, and Judge Hallbrooks is with us by interactive online technology. And although she's not with us in the courtroom, she is participating in the proceedings, and we're happy to have her. Counsel, each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel for you to use for rebuttal if you'd like. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument so we can keep track of the argument and who's attached to the arguments. There is a button right in the front, I think the right side of the lectern, so that you can raise it or lower it for your convenience. Counsel for appellant, whenever you are ready to proceed, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I'm going to need to lower. Some gentleman was much taller than me here. May it please the court, counsel.
Before you begin, I want to make sure the clock is restarted. All right, whenever you're ready to proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Bo McGraw. I represent the appellant in these proceedings, G Urban Companies, Inc. versus Roseville Area Schools ISD District 623. This is a case about one party adhering to the principles of fair and reasonableness and another party that didn't. What do we know about this case? We know that this was a construction case that had three components to it. In dispute in this for this part of the case is the work that was supposed to be done in and around the track, specifically whether or not engineered grade soil was going to be used as the basis for the track. We know this. We know that the respondent in these proceedings sent out two separate drawings for individuals to access and determine what an appropriate bid might be. We know that my client didn't have control over that. We know that it was the respondent through their contractor, Krauss Anderson. We know that individuals that do this type of work access various databases to gain access to these particular drawings so they can make a bid. We know in this case that my client, G Urban Enterprise and Companies, accessed a database called Minnesota Builders Exchange. And when he accessed that exchange, what did he find? He found a set of drawings that did not require engineered soil relative to the track.
Is there a dispute that before the bid was awarded, there had been substantial communication between the parties so that it was at least asserted at that time that this manufactured soil would be used? This point of dispute that you're saying was on the table already?
You're correct. And there was some dialogue in that space, and that's where I get to my kind of theme. Part of the argument here is folks acting fair and reasonable. So here's what happened. My client did submit the bid. He found out when he submitted the bid that they were going to accept the bid because it was the low bid. He learned that it was the low bid because he didn't bid the drawing that some of the other contractors bid, which required the engineered soil. He became aware of that. He started communication almost immediately. This communication started in July. The bidding process was mid to late June. His bid, he was known to be accepted in late July. And then he said, I see this issue. I didn't bid the same drawing that other individuals bid. So a discussion started. That first discussion started between my client and Krauss Anderson directly saying, you know, I relied upon what you put out into the public space to do the bid, and it's different than what other folks looked at because I've learned that since. So here's what I'm asking. I'm asking that we do one of two things. I'm asking that we make a judgment of the we make an adjustment to my bid, which would allow for me to amend my bid to allow for engineered soil. That's going to increase my cost, but it's still going to be less than $100,000 less than the next closest bid.
This was blind bidding otherwise, correct?
I understand that to be the case, but...
So wouldn't that give your client an unfair advantage knowing the other bids at that point?
Well, he knew it. I don't know how he knew that bid. That part wasn't developed on the in the course of the district court proceeding in this case.
Well, but either way, you're saying that your client was aware that it would have been lower than the other bids. Wouldn't that be a problem?
I don't know if it would be here, because the way this particular part of the bid would occur, and my client provided support for it during the district court proceeding and also showed it to Krauss Anderson and the respondent school as these discussions were occurring, he simply went out and obtained a bid from a separate subcontractor that provides this engineered soil, and that was like $63,000. And so it was kind of a fixed amount, I think.
But getting to your point, though, I mean, that this would have been a lower bid, and it was the parties were aware of it at the time. There are laws that would prohibit the district from engaging in that type of negotiation. Isn't that so?
They never cited those laws. I'm not aware of that, Your Honor. That might be an important consideration, and I appreciate that you're bringing it to my attention. I just don't know if that exists. I will tell you, though.
I mean, public bidding for a government agency to... I mean, you could see there'd be room for skullduggery here if a party comes to the table later and says, well, I didn't know it, and some insider in the government says, oh, well, you're right. Let's go ahead with your bid instead. It's lower.
Yeah.
That would be a problem.
Yeah, it potentially could be a problem. I understand that. And so if my client's discussions, again, trying to be fair and reasonable and making sure that the residents of this community receive the most competitive bid, he brought another option to their attention. He said, you created this issue, I didn't. You sent out a set of drawings to one particular process. You sent out a separate set of drawings to another one. I didn't rely upon the second one because I didn't know it was there. I relied upon the first one because that's what I looked at. So let's do this. If you don't want me to amend my bid, let's go ahead and let's just reopen the bidding process. Everybody has the same sheet of music. Let's reopen the bidding process. He made that request to Krauss Anderson. He made and then through counsel, he hired a lawyer. Krauss Anderson had an attorney. There was extensive correspondence back and forth on this issue. And then my client even showed up at a school board meeting on the day before the contract was executed in this case.
Was the school district required to accept that option when it has other bids on the table?
It doesn't. But if the school board's really trying to get the lowest bid for the taxpayers, and not only does my client come in with the lowest bid, but he says I can even still have the lowest bid if I'm reading off the right drawings, but...
It may not be politically wise, but I'm just saying as a matter of law, if the district's not required to do it, I'm just trying to get a sense of how your client was harmed in this proceeding by going forward with the bid, knowing that the district's position was there are going to be additional costs involved beyond what your client's bid had included.
Well, how he was harmed was he really had to sign the contract. This was roughly $70,000 to $100,000 in dispute on a 1.6.
He was required to sign the contract? Wasn't he allowed at that point if he wanted to get out of the bid to get out of it?
I don't know how reasonable that would be. I mean, if we're applying real-life circumstances, we're dealing with a small... construction vendor near St. Paul, Minnesota. We're in the middle of COVID. It's a $1.65 million contract, and we've got between $70,000 to $100,000 in dispute. How does he look his employees in the face and say that I'm going to turn away a contract of that quality when I have this amount in dispute? Now, they're going to argue, well, then he agreed to it.
So just to be clear, then, you're saying it wouldn't be reasonable for him to do it because of business reasons, but there's no legal obligation for your client to have either made the bid or stuck with the bid at that point. Your client would have been free without any penalties to step away from the bid at that point.
He would, despite how impractical I think that would be from an economic standpoint, considering where we were at that time, unique time period. And again, he's a small contractor on the east side of St. Paul. But I think here's where the focus can lie on this issue, rather than just... And he's got to make this kind of really difficult, almost false choice to turn down a really lucrative contract. Let's look at what the school. The school is the one that caused this issue. They sent out the wrong drawings to a particular vendor that folks in the industry relied upon. But even more to that point, they had the benefit of accepting the low bid that wasn't consistent with the work that had to be done. And they received that benefit to my client's detriment.
But they also gave your client the opportunity. They said before the school board meeting, if you don't want to go forward with this, you can withdraw.
Right, but I think that goes to, I appreciate the question, Your Honor. I don't think that was practical. I don't, for the reasons that I argued just moments ago. Again, small vendor, East Side of St. Paul, we've got $1.65 million that's going to come in the door relative to this work, and you're going to be short $70,000 to $100,000. Okay? I think most people would take that job, unless you're Krauss Anderson. Most people would take that job. And they would because they got mouths to feed. But that doesn't mean that it was fair for the school and Krauss Anderson to take advantage of that circumstance that they created. They received beyond the benefit of their bargain. My client did not receive the benefit of the bargain. Well, they were unjustly enriched, Your Honor.
Let me ask you about what they created, because when I read your brief, I saw a blank thing, but in reading respondent's brief, I can see that there's some squiggly lines that show where this soil needs to be used. And so it's not as clear as the other drawing where there's dots in there, but this does have squiggly lines, and it matches up with the other drawing that shows this is the areas where soil is needed.
But it didn't denote engineered soil. One drawing specifically denoted engineered soil, the other one did not. And to the extent that that's an ambiguity that exists, that's a fact issue that should have been resolved with the district court, that we did not have a chance to resolve that issue. But if we look at this case from a standpoint of who was treated fairly, was somebody unjustly enriched? They were. That's a fact. The school district got more benefit for their bargain than they were entitled to.
Well, why was it unjust enrichment? You've got a change order. I mean, you don't have a right to a change order. You have a right to propose a change, and if the parties agree to it, then it becomes part of the negotiated contract, right?
It does. So the way I pled this out, I pled it out on three theories. Number one, I had a breach of contract claim. The focus there primarily is on the change order. My client entered into a contract with them. They signed it. He made it clear to the city council. He made it clear to Krauss Anderson. He made it clear to the district that he intended to address this item that they created through a change order. He then followed the provisions of the change order.
But there was no agreement at that time. Correct me if I'm wrong. Sorry to interrupt, but there was no agreement at that time that a change order would in fact be authorized for this particular element of the project.
He understood that the contract would require him to go through those specific steps that are outlined in the contract regarding change order and then change order acceptance by the school district.
Without a guarantee at that time that
no guarantee.
Okay.
No guarantee. But, you know, what happens is in those circumstances, when you don't have a guarantee then, which you don't ever have, of course, is then there would be a dispute resolution mechanism that would occur. And the parties, they went ahead and went through those mechanisms without success in resolving the dispute. So this is why we ended up in the district court, now at the Court of Appeals. So the first theory was breach of contract, focused primarily on the change order and the idea that the respondent didn't adhere to the change order provisions and didn't otherwise give proper consideration to this. The other theory...
Why wasn't... when you say that your client got the unfair part of the... that the bargain wasn't met, I mean, didn't your client essentially assume the risk? I mean, you step into the contract. If we win, we get a great deal. If we don't, we don't. But your client sort of bought the risk.
Correct me if I'm wrong about that. Well, and I think that's the way the district court came down, right? So, I mean, and I think that, you know, this court could come down like that as well. But
why is that not the case?
Well, I would invite you to look at it just a little bit differently if you could. And again, my view of this is that in contracts, it's assumption of the risk. I see that doctrine more often in negligence-type cases and things like that. But when contracts cases, and we're looking at financial issues associated with the transaction, we can't get around the fact that the school received more than they bargained for with my client. They did. They received engineered soil, and they didn't pay for it because it wasn't in my client's bid. And they knew the cost associated with it because they had the opportunity to look at everybody else's bid that had it in there. When I say everybody else's bid, I don't know that. I assume there might have been others that made the same made the same item my client made where he looked at this other exchange. But we can't get around the fact that one client benefited from this and the other client didn't. The assumption of the risk, I think, falls into this kind of false choice.
I'm not talking about assumption of the risk. I'm talking about in basic bargaining. You purchase or you're willing to absorb the cost of the risk in the bargain, and you sort of roll the dice going forward. I wouldn't call it an assumption of the risk. Okay. I think it's part of the deal. Is it worth it to take the chance and roll the dice? Correct me if I'm wrong about that sort of game theory approach to this.
I think that had to be, if I'm being really candid here, because we have to have this kind of discussion if we're going to get to a good place on these cases. If I'm being really candid, do I think my client had to have that thought in his mind at some point during these negotiations at the end? Absolutely. Okay? But the other part of this, and I think the predominant consideration that was in his mind is, do I walk away from this when there's this 1.65 sitting out there versus this small amount in dispute, and why can't they just be reasonable? Why can't we just deal with this in a way where they acknowledge it wasn't in the bid, it's a cost I'm going to have to incur as the contractor, why would they take advantage of me in that regard? If we just look at contractual principles, he did not get the benefit of his bargain. They got more than they bargained for. That's the way I view this. But to answer your question squarely, Your Honor, yeah, he had to give consideration to both of those thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. McGraw. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you. Zach Cronin for respondent. May it please the court. The question in this case is whether the Roseville Area School District breached its contract with appellant G Urban Companies. The answer is no. This case boils down to a dispute over how much appellant is owed for installing engineered soils in one of the district's construction projects located at the middle school track and field area. Because the parties entered into a written contract, the answer to this question depends on what is provided in the four corners of this contract. The reality is this dispute, we're here today because appellant made a business decision to enter into this contract knowing that it was not clear, or he did not have knowing that the district expected him to use engineered soils in this contract for the $1.65 million that he was owed. Here, the contract incorporates a number of drawings and written specifications which clearly require the use of engineered soils. Specifically, as was cited to in the district's brief, drawings known as the C200 drawing and the 7C502 drawings show where and how the engineered soils are required to be installed as part of the contract. Additionally, the written specifications for the project in 31A have specific language regarding the installation of engineered soils, and addendum number 2 specifically said, add 6-inch engineered soil sections to the track.
Now, counsel, I want to ask you about those drawings, because
yep.
I asked appellant's counsel about that squiggly lines, and that's blank otherwise, and it's white, but that has those lines around that. In that document, is that denoting the engineering soils?
Correct, yes. So the reality is, unfortunately, this happened in the district court too. This is a huge PDF. You know, when you pull this out, it's not just on an 8x11. So when we compress it down to get into the filing system, I think it was Odyssey at the district court, it compressed it. It's hard to see. And I want to make a point to that, Your Honor.
Do we have in the record the version of the map that was actually presented?
We do. Yes. It's the version. It just had to get compressed. Physically, the PDF was too big to fit into the filing system, but the actual PDF, the original that was there, is in the filing system, or in the exhibits to the district court record.
But do we have access to those through Odyssey? You're saying no, we don't, because the file is condensed?
No, we do. I guess I could submit the full exhibit separately. You know, I think it's just, I don't know how the technology works, frankly, but I think it compresses itself, the PDF.
In other words, I just want to get a sense of whether we have access to what the bidders would have had access
yes,
to.
Yes, you do.
Or do you have a different, do you have a condensed version that doesn't include the detail?
No, you have the full, you can see the full detail, the key symbol and everything. And I want to make a point there. Opposing counsel mentioned that that's a factual dispute that must be resolved at trial. In Exhibit 1, which is the instruction to bidders, Section 1.03C3, says it is the bidder's responsibility to bring discrepancies, ambiguities, omissions, or matters in need of clarification to the attention of the architect for interpretation and decision. If there is a discrepancy that is unclarified prior to the bid, The contractor shall be responsible for the more stringent interpretation of the unclarified position. So to that point, if there was any questions about what the key symbol is showing and how that related to the depiction, it's the bidder's responsibility to clarify that. The other issue here, too, is opposing or appellant does not address any of the written specifications that referenced engineered soils, the addenda, the work scope 31A, all reference use of engineered soils beyond just the depiction. So,
in those written
specifications. Mr. Cronin?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is the record clear as to whether or not appellant looked at those documents?
Yes, so the appellant, through the district's, Carl Sanderson's the district's construction manager, we can see that the appellant's company logged into the I-square foot, which is what appellant calls the correct documents. We can see that he logged into those documents prior to submitting his bid. In his bid, he acknowledged receiving all of the bid documents, including the addenda. And the reality is there's sort of this presumption that the MBEX, the Minnesota Builders Exchange document, is valid. At the district court proceedings, appellant conducted no discovery at all. He says he presumes that the district created this document or Krauss Anderson did. You know, there's been no discovery on from MBX or the district about the document. When the district submitted discovery requests to appellant about that document, he was unable to provide information on exactly when it was obtained, who specifically obtained it. So, you know, just relying on this presumption that it's valid is also not creating a material factual dispute. And I want to note, too, that there's no dispute that ultimately in the contract, which is what governs this dispute, that the documents were incorporated into that contract. Sections 9.1.4 through 9.1.6 specifically incorporate the C200 and the C502 documents or drawings into the contract. Additionally, addenda number 1 and 2 are specifically incorporated. So all of these documents are clearly within the record. And appellant can't get around that issue. So appellant instead focuses much of the argument on what occurred before the contract was entered into. That argument misses the point for a few reasons. First, the contract is the entire agreement between the parties. Article 1 of the contract states that the written contract, quote, represents the entire and integrated agreement between the parties hereto and supersedes prior negotiations, representations, or agreements, either written or oral, end quote. This means that the prior discussions and negotiations between the parties cannot override the clear and unambiguous contract language. Here, the engineered soils were part of the contract. Appellant did not incorporate any sort of reservation or specific language about submitting a future change order into the contract. And the reality is the district couldn't grant the relief that he was requesting. Under Minnesota Statutes 471.345, school districts and all public entities are required to follow the competitive bidding laws. You cannot make a material change to the contract or to the bidder's bid after the bid opening. So essentially what appellant was asking for here is, I submitted my bid, I saw what the next bidder was, and actually he even said this in some of his communications. I saw what the next bid is, I got another bid that's less than that, you should award it to me. You know, that's not how competitive bid laws work, and if the district had granted that request, I think we would have been teeing up, frankly, a lawsuit from a different bidder. And the second issue is appellant, frankly, misrepresents the interactions that occurred.
Counsel, before you get there, I just want to go back to the written specifications.
Yep.
Are those written specifications, were they made available in the MBEX portion of it where appellant's client got the documents?
Yep. So the MBEX, there's a number of sort of constructions exchanges. So essentially, Krauss Anderson posts it's the official documents in I square foot. And then I think through the affidavit of one of the Krauss Anderson reps, we got this in that essentially these other companies, MBEX, I think there's one in Albert Lee, they pull those documents and then post them on their own exchanges where they have members. So all of the specifications, the addenda, everything were posted, were pulled from I square foot and put onto MBEX by that company.
So in MBEX, where in the record would I find the written specifications that talk about the engineered soils?
On the MBEX?
Correct.
Well, that wasn't, you know, we requested all the documents from appellant during discovery, and we never got them. You know, the district doesn't control the MBEX. We control the actual specifications, the documents that are in the contract, and then were posted I square foot. So ultimately, appellant didn't produce whatever documents were fully downloaded from that exchange. So, and I want to go back then to the next.
If I could pause you just for a moment, yep, before you move on. Would the law have prevented, anything in the competitive bidding law have prevented the district from reopening the bid to everyone at the moment that the appellant asserted, well, I caught something, I didn't notice the engineered soil, let's have a redo?
Absolutely not. The law would allow us to rebid this. The reality is we had this through an affidavit at the district court level. Based on the timing of the construction project, it was not feasible or reasonable for the district to redo so. And the other risk that, frankly, we represent clients throughout the state, all of our clients bear when you rebid is you might not get as good of bids. Market conditions might change. The contractors may have gotten a new contract and don't submit. So there's a lot of risk with rebidding. And there's nothing, the inverse of that is true, Your Honor, too. There's nothing that forces us to rebid a project. This was, you know, the way that the district looks at this issue is there was significant discussions before entering into the contract. The district made it clear through its attorney, through Krauss Anderson, and ultimately through the school board that that engineered soils were required. Appellant made a, frankly, business decision to say, I want to enter into this contract, knowing that the district's expectations were, and the contract specifically required, that you use engineered soils. So the ultimate question is, what does the contract provide? And here, all of the drawings, the specifications were in the contract. And the reality is, appellant installed the engineered soils correctly. It was never given a change order. It was never given, you know, any sort of change directive, but it installed the engineered soils correctly, which shows that those specifications were part of the contract. And I just to kind of hit that point a little bit further, the district's attorney specifically said prior to entering into the contract, the district will strongly oppose any effort by G Urban post-award to assert a claim of entitlement to additional compensation. At the school board meeting, appellant claims that at the school board meeting, Roseville reaffirmed its promise at where it represented to Greg Urban that he could submit a change order for the cost of engineered soils. Again, that's just not true. At the school board meeting, the district's administration stated, we wouldn't accept a change order because it is in the work scope that was bid out. So all these discussions occurred prior to entering into the contract, and appellant voluntarily entered into the contract. I think the district court here, where they granted summary judgment from the bench at the summary judgment hearing, put a kind of nice bow on this whole issue in her written order. She said that there's no question of material fact that before signing the contract, plaintiff had access to information about the project making clear that an engineered track soil was required. Two, prior to signing the contract, plaintiff attempted to change the scope of the project related to engineered soil. Three, defendant refused to change the scope of the project related to the engineered track soil. And four, plaintiff signed the contract, which it admits is valid, knowing that defendant refused to change the scope of the project related to the engineered track soil. So here, that to me summarizes this entire issue. Appellant made a business decision to enter into this contract. Like opposing counsel said, this was a $1.65 million contract. It wanted to enter into the contract knowing that there was risk here that ultimately would not be entitled to the $75,000. As far as the other two issues, the claims raised, unjust enrichment and promissory estoppel, here the case law is clear that when there's a contract that addresses the party's rights, this type of equitable relief is not appropriate. Additionally, there's been no showing for either of these claims as far as unlawful actions by the district. Again, it was complying with Minnesota bid law, or that there was any sort of inducement by the district to make appellant enter into this contract. It was clear throughout the process prior to signing the contract that it would require the use of engineered soils. If there's no other questions, that's all I have.
Judge Holbrooks?
Nothing for me. Thank you, Judge Ross.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No rebuttal. All right. Well, thank you both, and thank you for your not just your oral argument today, but your written submissions. It's thorough and well presented. We will issue a decision within the statutory period. Thank you.
Thank you.
And have a good afternoon.
Thank you.